Welcome to a new episode of OTT Talks. My name is Enrique Mendizábal, and I'm the director of OTT. OTT Talks is a series of conversations with thought leaders and practitioners in the field of evidence-informed policymaking. In today's episode, we explore how, in some contexts, think tanks are taking the role of government watchdogs and how that impacts on their work and influence. Joining us today is Liliana Alvarado, Executive Director of ETHOS, a Mexican think tank focused on innovative public policy recommendations for Mexico's development. Bienvenida, Liliana.
Thank you so much, Enrique. Thank you for having me.
I hope all is well in Mexico. I hear you're having elections soon.
Yes, we are having elections next year. So it's a very interesting moment for the country.
Good. And I'm sure there'll be lots for think tanks to be doing. Liliana,
lots for think tanks and for candidates as well.
Yes, sure. Liliana, I have been meaning to talk to you about this. I looked at your website the other day, and the first topic that comes up is anti-corruption. And I should say, by the way, very great website. I have to say it's one of the prettiest websites I have seen in a long time. You know, the opening drawing that pops up is quite nice. Enjoyed refreshing it to see it again. But ETHOS is in Mexico, in Latin America. And I have to say, you think that the study of and the fight against corruption should be every Latin American think tank's priority, but it isn't. So let me ask you a question of origin. Has anti-corruption always been a focus area for ETHOS?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for your comment on our website, Enrique. I do have to say that it did take a lot of work and effort, and that we are very satisfied with the final outcome. Thank you so much. And actually, no, in the very beginning when ETHOS was established back in 2008, we had transparency and accountability as our not to say our main priorities in the think tank, but very important issues that we had in our agenda. But then starting 2015, there was a constitutional reform that gave birth to the National Anti-Corruption System. And then in ETHOS and many other think tanks that had the transparency approach, we switched from having these topics to the anti-corruption topics. I also have to say that another reason for this was the fact that there was some funding going to the anti-corruption system. Funders were interested in knowing what was the system all about, and I mean, what were the details regarding its design, the challenges in its implementation, both at the federal but also at the federal and also subnational level.
Right, and what kind of work does ETHOS do in this sector in anti-corruption? So it's a research, developing of tools, it's an active watchdog kind of work.
Yeah, I have to say that we do a little bit of everything. But one thing that would be different from other think tanks is that we also do a lot of journalistic reports. So these journalistic reports have it's a different analysis. You know, I would say that these reports complement our research analysis, but with these reports, we've been able to really see what are some of the problems that are affecting the system. We still have very high levels of impunity. And the system has been going on since 2015, right? And the corruption levels in Mexico have been gotten worse. I can say that probably we get like corruption scandals every week, right? So we have really analyzed what is going on. And these reports have given us really interesting information. And let me just give you some examples. We've analyzed some like audit offices at the local level and also controllers' offices and other institutions that at the federal and both local level are involved in the tackling of corruption. We've seen how the problems are quite diverse. You can see that for some of these institutions, the lack of budget is really a problem, or the allocation of the budget. And others have a lack of staff or a lack of personnel. And some other institutions might not have a few staff, but you know that the staff that they have is not really well-trained. You might get a psychologist that is a political appointee that where you should be having perhaps a lawyer, right? And also I would say that just in general, we have evidence that there is no political will to make this system work.
Right, I think I can relate to that, right? So we would see more money going into anti-corruption bodies and teams and more resources if there was clearly political will by the political class. But let me follow up on this, and let me ask you a little bit more about these journalistic reports. What do they give you that a traditional research report, or research process, academic or policy research process does not give you?
It's a really different kind of evidence of what you get. You might have a journalistic report that reveals a corruption scandal that perhaps involves the president's sons or the president's brother, right? Or even some members of the cabinet. It's very difficult to do this with just like traditional research, right? But like I said, you do get a lot of attention from doing these journalistic reports. And in this sense, you have to be ready and you have to be prepared, you know? Because obviously, when you have these kinds of reports, you get negative attention from the government. When you scrutinize the government's activities, you will be like a very uncomfortable actor, right? So you start, like changing more into like an oversight institution and scrutinizing, like I said, the work and just checking that they're not like illegal or unethical actions on government agencies. So yes, it is a very difficult and also different kind of work, because there are consequences to being a watchdog, Enrique, and think tanks that have like this kind of role have to be aware of it. And for example, in Mexico, you might get an audit from what would be the equivalent of the IRS. Right. So you have to be ready for that. Or maybe some of the funding that you're getting from the Mexican private sector would be reduced or would be stopped because the president, sometimes he like publicly shames some of these entrepreneurs in his morning conference. So these are examples of the things that have actually happened to think tanks that have had this watchdog role in Mexico.
And has that changed the way that your funders, your different audiences, your partners perceive ETHOS? Right? So as you adopt this role that, as you said, is a watchdog role, whereby by the nature of the subject you're addressing, there is a bit of a confrontation with government or with those that have the whole power and are benefiting from corrupt practices. Do people see ETHOS in a different way?
I don't think that they see us in a different way, because we're still doing the think tank's traditional work, right? So this watchdog role, I would say, that is sort of like complementing our work. We're still generating evidence, perhaps our main audience is not the federal government anymore, but we're still speaking with our data, our information, and our evidence to the general public and to like scholars, the academia, et cetera, et cetera. So we're still generating our traditional evidence and our traditional information. So I would say we're just like complementing the work that we do with this oversight oversight role. But I don't think that our funders or other think tanks see us differently. And also maybe this is because like I would say most of the think tanks that used to have transparency as a research area in the think tanks are now doing very similar work and now are having anti-corruption in their agendas.
Right, that's interesting. And so I was going to ask you about more think tanks. Are more think tanks doing this role alongside ETHOS? So that means you're not alone. You're not necessarily a single organization taking on this role, but there are other organizations with a similar structure and similar mission to ETHOS that are dealing with these issues.
Yes, both at the federal level and also at the local level. You know, like the capacities of think tanks at subnational levels are much lower. They're struggling, you know, if you want to be a watchdog at a subnational level, you need to like empower the organizations. They have a lot of difficulties, you know, like training the personnel. I mean, even like I said, if you get like an audit from the equivalent of the IRS and you don't have like a good like administrative stuff, you will be in trouble, right? So what we have been doing is we've been like empowering civil society organizations and think tanks at a subnational level. We do think that it is quite dangerous if all of these small organizations that have the anti-corruption topic, then if they start dissolving little by little, you know, that would be a really big problem, I think, for the country in general. And I also have to say that if we think about the topic more like at an international level, I am surprised that other think tanks in the Latin American region do not have the topic in their agendas. Enrique, it is quite surprising because actually, you know that corruption is one of the biggest problems that we are facing in the region. And exactly. If you look at the most recent like indexes, let's just take, for example, the capacity to combat corruption index, you can see that the situation is very worrying across the region. The latest edition of this index registered a decline in the regional average score for the first time since the 2020 edition. And if you look at specific cases, and unfortunately we have Mexico in these specific cases, like Mexico, Guatemala, and others, their overall score levels have worsened every year since this index was published in 2019.
Exactly, I agree. And I think I am surprised, I agree with you, I am surprised that corruption isn't a topic that every think tank in Peru, for instance, covers. You know, it's covered every once in a while, as you say, through the lens of, or the label of transparency or accountability. But for the most part, the evidence we get about corruption and discussions or debates surrounding what to do about corruption come from either independent investigative journalism and from the more traditional sort of transparency type organizations, right? Organizations that right from the beginning were set up to address the issue of corruption or transparency or accountability in government. But we hear very little from think tanks. And so that leads to another question around the role that think tanks can play in this field. And you've sort of alluded to this, right? So, you know, new anti-corruption policy in Mexico, but there doesn't seem to be slowing down, right? I think I was going to ask the question, does evidence matter? This is like an open question for us maybe, but does evidence matter when it comes to this, right? So I think that Peruvians do not need research to know that corruption here is endemic, right? We do not need think tanks to tell us anything we do not know already, right? So I think every Peruvian, even in a position of privilege, would, you know, engages with corruption on a daily basis, right? However, there's still plenty of evidence that corruption is out there. We get it from think tanks, we get it from the media, even from the media that is part of the problem. You know, often they can't avoid and they have to report on corruption from time to time, right? Even when it affects them or involves them. And I expect the same is in Mexico, right? And things are getting worse, right? There's more information about what's happening, but also there's a feeling that things are getting worse. And we start to see that progress being made is being dismantled, right? Institutions are being dismantled across the region. And it just occurs to me that more evidence about corruption is not driving us to do something about it. I don't know what you think about that. And in that sense, you know, is the role of think tanks to help generate more evidence about corruption? How can think tanks, you know, is the role of think tanks to try to get us to act on that evidence, on that information? What, you know, what could be that? What could be that catalytic role for think tanks?
I agree. I mean, of course, evidence in general is being challenged at an international level. But I have to say that I am convinced that even in that scenario that you described, the evidence that we are generating is extremely relevant. In Mexico, you have a president that is repeating over and over that in his administration, there is no more corruption. Can you imagine that, right? So this is the president of a country where, like I mentioned earlier, corruption levels have gotten worse, and there's like corruption scandals revealed almost every week, right? So I do think that more than ever, it is important to have oversight actors that try to balance that narrative with evidence. Like I said, I do think that as a think tank, it is very important to continue analyzing the reasons behind the lack of results in the anti-corruption system. Perhaps this administration is not very open to that conversation. But like I said, we will be having elections pretty soon in Mexico. So this is information that is very valuable for the presidential candidates and also very valuable for the next administration. And I have to say something that is also very important, I think not only for the corruption topic, but for Latin America and for democracies in general. There is also, due to the relationship that there is between corruption and also the weakening of democratic regimes, Enrique, yeah. It is crucial mm-hmm. that we do keep analyzing this topic, you know, obviously because of the corruption levels that we have in the region, people are really upset. No, like you said, you may see that administrations in the region might change, but still the corruption remains or is even worse, right? So it is important to know that many Latin Americans are disillusioned, you know, and are worrying and maybe thinking that maybe democracy is not the way to go, right? And why is this? Because we've seen how corruption is involved in politics, political processes, and sometimes even in some elections, right? At least in Mexico, we've seen resources coming and going from the organized crime, you know, just cash flowing and financing campaigns. And you see how there is like almost no sanctions for these violations of the law. So I have to say that, yes, corruption is anti-corruption is a very important topic, but even more because of the relationship that this topic now has with the democratic regimes and democracy as a whole.
I agree. And again, let's to follow on that conversation, democracy, which, as you say, is also, being challenged in the region, and the weak institutions we have are being challenged, in some cases dismantled.
Yeah.
And those two are linked. Again, you would not typically find that democracy, governance, democracy are the subject of many think tanks, research agendas. So I think to some extent, this remains sort of an academic issue, an issue that is discussed at political science faculties or research departments of universities, some think tanks like yours and a few others in the region, but not as a focus, right? We think we have the sense that By and large, we've adopted in the region a much more sort of technocratic approach to things. So we've said, okay, let's look at the technical aspect of education policy, and let's not get involved in discussions around whether, you know, the democratic system, you know, is helping us or hindering us in the delivery of education services and outcomes. Or let's not look at corruption within the education system. Let's just look at the very technical interventions that we can recommend to try to improve education outcomes. So we leave these aspects out of the conversation, and many think tanks, I think, do this in the region. Difficult subjects.
Yeah, but there is a very high risk, you know, of exactly. Not really, you know, having these topics at think tanks, you know. And one of these days, and you can have, you know, we have Cuba as an example, and Nicaragua, and Venezuela, you know, like if, I mean, when democratic values are being challenged, you see how in all of these countries also the civic space starts closing, right? And civil society organizations and also think tanks start being a target. But not only think tanks, but also the private sector, the media outlets, you know, and like all of these actors start being intimidated, right? So if you really don't think that this is a mission for you as a think tank, one of these days you just wake up, you know, and
yeah, and there'll be nobody there to help you.
Help you, you know. So like everybody is pulling back, and I can see this how it has been happening in Mexico little by little, you know, like people, I mean, in general, you know, they don't want to raise flags, Enrique. So if think tanks are not there to raise the flags, one of these days there will not be think tanks, you know, and there will not be like this watchdog role, and there will be no like oversight institutions, and we will probably not have a democracy. We'll probably have an authoritarian regime, right? So I do think that you cannot, as a think tank, just like analyze these topics that are quite comfortable, you know, and do it from your desk, you know, and as a think tank, yeah, we also have a responsibilities, you know, and to me, some of these responsibilities is really putting into your agenda these topics that are quite uncomfortable, not only for the government, but for the think tanks as well. Democracy, democratic governance, anti-corruption, specifically when you can see that there might be, you know, like this transition in certain countries from a democracy to an autocracy, right? So you really have to raise those flags
early on, before it's too late. I mean, exactly. This brings me to a reflection on business models, right? Because often we talk about, you know, what think tanks should do, and then immediately I start to think about, okay, so, but what can they do? Not every think tank has the same business model, and I can imagine that to tackle things like democratic backsliding, to tackle things like corruption, especially in government, right? You have to have a very, very reliable and somewhat independent funding source. Many think tanks depend for a large part of their funding of consultancy work with governments or consultancy work with private sector associations often. In some countries, there isn't I think in most Latin America and in most of the global South, there isn't a strong, thriving, large enough philanthropic, you know, professional philanthropic sector. And so you rely on foreign funding for some of these programs of work, some of these activities. Is that the case with ETHOS? Are you able to do this work because of your funding source allows you to do this, or are you finding it hard and difficult to sustain the work?
I have to say that one of the things that help in ETHOS is that we have other research areas that complement, you know. It is hard to get, you know, like local funding for this issue. Like I said, the private sector is also being intimidated. And we have not done consultancy work since 2018 for the government. So we have no resources coming from the government at all. Right. And like you said, it is a problem that in at least in Mexico, we don't have also like a philanthropic, strong philanthropic sector. So we rely basically on the funding that comes from development agencies, aid agencies, or just like international funding, right? And I mean, this is quite difficult because sometimes maybe anti-corruption or democratic governments might be a priority, but you know this, Enrique, maybe like, I don't know, like maybe in 2 months, we will be looking at perhaps, I don't know, like polarization or the, you know, like climate change attracts a lot of funding. And, yeah. And so the priorities for the funders change. And sometimes as think tanks, you cannot do much about it, no? But the good part is that we have other research areas in ETO, so we sort of like complement the funding. We do public finances also in ETO, sustainable development, inclusion, and some work also on cities. So I have to say that fortunately, we have those other topics and the funding for those other topics helps, you know, the work that we do in this research area.
Right. Let me ask you a final question. We've seen around the world, and in some parts of the world, we've seen think tanks adopting this watchdog function, right? As they tackle issues around democracy, around authoritarianism, around corruption, anti-corruption, public looking at public finances. So as they feel that the situation is getting worse or the civic space is closing, they've begun to adopt this watchdog function. Many of those think tanks, I was talking to think tank directors in the Western Balkans, that's how they were born. They were born as watchdog organizations. They left that role, you know, behind. They started working more as a more traditional think tank, working alongside government, political parties. But now things are getting worse. They are, you know, going back to that watchdog role. Do you mm-hmm. see in Mexico and Latin America that role you know, being, you know, in greater demand in the future? Do you see ETOs increasing that watchdog role, or do you have the expectation that you're going to reach a balance, you know, where you're going to combine things, or you're hoping, or you're seeing a transition back to a more traditional think tank role?
Yeah, I do believe that the role that you played as a think tank actually depends on many different elements, right? And I have to say that for every think tank in the world, like having access to the policymaking process is crucial. And like mm-hmm. I said, sometimes when you're a target of the government and when the civic space is closing and democratic values are being channeled, it is like just impossible to have access to that policymaking exactly. process, right? But I do believe that in Mexico and many other countries in the region, think tanks are acting more and more as watchdogs. I mean, I have to say, I hope that this role is temporary, you know, but I'm not sure about this. I mean, I don't know what would the elections turn out to be next year, right? But then again, Enrique, we have talked about this for very long. We have to be ready to change. We have to be ready to adapt. We have to be able to also work around uncertainty, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, we are in Mexico playing more of a watchdog role. And also this is a role that ETOs didn't have like a few years ago, right? And we are trying to feel comfortable and learning, you know, of being in this role. This is not something that we did before, right? And like I said, there are many challenges and risks associated to this yeah. role. But I am hopeful, you know, that maybe think tanks in Mexico will be working in a better context during the next administration. I'm hopeful.
I'm hopeful too as well for Mexico and for the rest of the region, and also because, as you said, this is a risky approach. But as you said before, it's also risky not to play this role in the long run. Thank you very much, Leanne. This was a very interesting conversation. As always, OTT Talks, we try to be challenging and engaging. Thank you, everybody else, for listening to us. We will be soon with more talks, so make sure you subscribe to our newsletter and our podcast, whatever you listen to it. Thank you, Liliana.
Thank you, Enrique.